Revelation chapter 13, I'm entitled today's message, The Two Beasts of the Revelation, and that's what we have here in this chapter 13. Perhaps you've heard the proverb, the darkest hour is just before dawn. The expression means that things often look the darkest, the most difficult or discouraging, just before the light arrives. As we're making our way through the book of Revelation, we've come now to a parenthetical element between the sounding of the sixth trumpet and the seventh trumpet. We've learned that the sounding of the seventh trumpet signifies we're nearing the end. If you look back at chapter 10 and verse 7, says, but in the days of the sounding of the seventh angel, when he is about to sound, the mystery of God would be finished. So we're coming to the end. We've noted in last week's chapter 12, we're going to see it again in this chapter 13. You'll notice in chapter 5, this reference to this time period. It says, chapter 13, verse 5, he was given authority to continue for 42 months. This 42 months, chapter 12 talked about it as a time, times, and half a time. In other places, it refers to it as 1,260 days. This is the latter half, the latter 3.5 years of the tribulation period. Now, this is what the Old Testament prophets referred to as the time of great tribulation. The time that Jesus said, such tribulation as never has been on the earth, nor ever will be. And we see some of that happening here in this chapter. We see that as Satan is here raising up his two world leaders, the Antichrist and the false prophet. Those are the two beasts in this chapter. We see verse 2 says, the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. Verse 3 says, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. Verse 7, it says, it was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe and tongue and nation. I don't know about you, but sometimes when I watch the news and I see how wickedness seems to be gaining strength, gaining power, gaining authority, I'll be honest, sometimes it alarms me. It can be a bit scary. Well, here in this chapter, we're told that that latter portion of the tribulation period, Satan's going to have free reign. The 1 John 5:19 says, the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. And indeed, at this time, these last 42 months, that will be true like it never has been before. Like it never has been before. But lest we get afraid and startled, as we're moving toward that time period and we're seeing things move in that direction, I think what the Lord is doing here, it's like it's coming, we've said, this is nearing the end. This cosmic battle between God and Satan, between good and evil, the final bout has been set. At the end of this 42 months, what happens, and we're going to come to this in chapter 19, is what's known as the Battle of Armageddon. And these two beasts, well, let's turn there. Turn to chapter 19. What's the end result of this final showdown between God and Satan, and good and evil, particularly as it relates to these two beasts we're going to look at today? Look at chapter 19, verse 20. You can back up, you could start at verse 11 and read right through. It's about the Battle of Armageddon. Verse 20 says, then the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet, who worked signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast, and those who worshipped his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone. So before you get all startled and scared as we read it and we look at the details of these two beasts, here's their end. Here's what happens to them. They're going to be defeated and they're going to be cast into the lake of fire. But we also see this time frame here, 42 months. So what's the Lord doing? Again, I think sometimes when we see wickedness seeming to gain an upper hand, we get startled. But that's not true of God. And what I think God is saying here, it's almost like there's two prize fighters that have been going at each other. And we're going to see here that the Antichrist is a big talker. He's arrogant. He's blaspheming God. I think God's looking at Satan and saying, all right, we're going to have one last showdown. And look, you got 42 months to give it your best shot. You got 42 months to train, get your forces together, get all ready. I'm giving you that free reign. I'm giving you that authority. There'll be no excuses. You got 42 months to get ready for this final showdown. So you better have things lined up, and you better give it your best shot. We've already seen he's going to lose. But God's given him 42 months, a free reign here on this earth. And what he's doing is he's gathering all his forces. It's, the chapter here says it's all the world's going to go after and follow it. All the nations of the world. The military might of the world is finally going to come together in one agreed resistance to God. It's going to come together in a world religion of worshiping the Antichrist. At the moment, there's a religious element to all the warfare we're seeing happening in the world. And Christianity and Islam have been at each other for years. That's why the Muslim military might can't join with nations that are Christian in nature. But at this time, they will come together. There will be a one world religion. There will be a one world military might. And we're going to see there will be a one world economy. That's what we see. This is Satan being given free reign for these 42 months to mount this final attempt to defeat God. And so that's what we're seeing here in this chapter. Satan's been given that freedom from the Lord, that authority. And we see here his two world leaders that he's going to utilize in this effort. So let's look, first of all, in verses 1 to 8 about the Antichrist. John says, I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea. This beast we're going to come to see is the Antichrist. There's been much discussion about what the sea symbolizes here. You can write this down, but both Revelation 11:7 as well as 17:8, indicate that the beast comes up out of the abyss. So it's best to equate the sea here with the abyss, the bottomless pit. We saw that back in chapter 9 when those demonic creatures that John said looked like locusts came up out of the abyss. We know that the abyss is the abode of demons. You remember the story of when Christ cast the demons out of the man who said his name was Legion, when Christ spoke, the demon said, don't send us to the abyss. That was their plea. And we know that later, we're going to come to this chapter 20, that's where Satan will be bound during the 1,000-year millennial reign of Christ. So this person is a rising out of the abyss. You put that together in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Now turn there because we're going to be jumping back and forth. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Antichrist is going to be a man who is possessed by a demon. So the demon comes up out of the abyss, but this is a human individual who's possessed and has demonic power. We know it's a person. Look at 2 Thessalonians 2:4. Says, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So this is a demon-possessed man who will be a gifted orator, an intellectual genius. He'll possess great charm and charisma, and he'll have immense leadership power. It's interesting that no person in human history will be more like Satan himself than this individual. You'll note that the description that's given of him in chapter 13, verse 1, matches very closely with the description of Satan in chapter 12, verse 3. Look back at chapter 12, verse 3. Satan, the dragon, is described as having 7 heads, 10 horns, and 7 diadems on his head. The beast is described as having 7 heads, 10 horns, and on his horns, 10 crowns. So he's going to be very much satanic in nature, as described similarly. The 7 heads here represent 7 successive world empires. Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, and Antichrist's final world kingdom as that 7th kingdom. 10 horns represent the power of the kings who will rule under Antichrist's authority. We won't take the time, but the number 10 here fits the imagery of Daniel's fourth beast as described in Daniel chapter 7, verses 7 and verse 24. Antichrist will arise from these 10 kings. He'll be one. Later he said, this is the horn, this is the king that suffered a mortal wound and was healed. But he'll be one that will rise up to rule over the other 10. And 10 here is a number that really represents all the world's political and military might. And we're going to see here in chapter 13, it says all the world will go after him. So it's not just a select 10 kingdoms. These are representative of the entire world empire. It says blasphemous names, like many before him, such as the Roman emperors and other monarchs. These rulers, these kings, will choose divine names and titles that dishonor the living God. If you read much of Roman history, the Roman emperors did that. They titled themselves as deity. So that's a bit of his background, his ancestry. Let's look at his authority. As John looked more closely at the beast, he saw that it incorporated the characteristics of the animals from the vision recorded in Daniel chapter 7. A lion, verse 2, it says it, that was the fitting symbol for the fierce, consuming power of the Babylonian Empire. The bear represented the ferocity, the strength, the stability of the Medo-Persian Empire. The leopard represented the Greeks' swift conquest, particularly that of Alexander the Great. It reflects the speed and the viciousness of his conquest. Antichrist's final empire here will be a composite of the empires that preceded it. And I think Satan, he knows history. He looks back and he looks at the world empires and he's like, I'm going to take the strength of all those world empires and my empire will have all the characteristics of the previous world empires, what was true of them. So his empire here will be a composite of the strengths that were represented in the previous world empires. So it's going to be a very strong, a very authoritative world empire under this Antichrist, again, during this latter half of the tribulation period. Verse 3, and I can't take credit for this alliterating that one. This is Dr. John MacArthur's analysis. But verse 3, his acclaim. A startling event will help Antichrist solidify his hold on the world. He says, and I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. While verse 3 speaks of one of the heads being slain, other passages specify that the beast himself is slain, which also is another indicator that this is a person. The personal pronoun in the phrase, his fatal wound, also indicates that one of the kings is in view here, not the empire as a whole. Now, this person is undoubtedly the Antichrist. Now, whether his death is real or fake is not clear. It may be that the Antichrist is really killed and God allows him to be resurrected. More likely, Antichrist's alleged death and resurrection will be a counterfeit of Christ's death and resurrection, staged as one of the lying wonders perpetrated by the false prophet. Whatever actually happens, people will believe that Antichrist has transcended death. Since the tribulation will be a time when the world will experience death at an unequaled level, we've already seen that 2 points already, that a third of the world population has died, another point, a fourth has died. So 2/3 of the world's population has succumbed to death. So at this time, the world will experience death on an unequaled level. Antichrist's apparent power over death will win him widespread acclaim. As a result, the whole earth will be amazed and follow after the beast, it says, verse 3. So one event that's going to happen, and this most likely this is part of the deception that's happening at this time, is that it will appear that Antichrist has died and come back to life, and that will amaze people and they'll follow him. Then verse 4, we see his adoration. The world's fascination with Antichrist will quickly become worship. He will encourage and demand that worship, that the world worship him. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4 that we read, he's going to exalt himself above all that is called God or that is worship, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And we're going to come later here in chapter 13, that an image of this beast is made, and people are commanded to worship the image. This is what scholars say is part of that abomination of desolation that Daniel speaks about. When he breaks his treaty with Israel, and he will set up this image of the beast in the temple for people to worship. Now you can imagine that's not going to sit well with Jews. he will demand worship, and that people worship his image. He'll be aided by his associate, the false prophet, who verse 12 says, causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, that is the Antichrist, whose deadly wound was healed. Not only will the deceived unbelievers worship Antichrist, but they will also worship the dragon. Verse 4 says, so they worship the dragon who gave authority to the beast. They'll be worshiping in essence Satan because he's the one who's giving this authority to the beast. So by worshiping Antichrist, unbelievers will actually be worshiping Satan, who's the real power behind it. This will be a period of satanic worship. As the people of the world worship Antichrist, they will cry out in awe, who is like the beast, and who is able to wage war with him? Verse 4 says. It's what you call a case of speaking too soon. Who is able to make war with him? We're going to find out who he is. It's not going to turn out. The implication here is the implied answer to these rhetorical questions that people are asking is no one. And by referring to Antichrist in language that should be reserved only for the worship of God, Antichrist deluded worshipers will attribute deity to him. So this is a period when politically, militarily, and religiously, Antichrist is going to reign supreme in all of those areas. In verse 5 and 6, we see his arrogance. Like his master, Satan, Antichrist will be an arrogant blasphemer. God will allow Antichrist to blaspheme and so give full expression to the wickedness that will cover the earth at that time. Antichrist's arrogance, predicted by the prophet Daniel, we won't take time to turn there, but you could turn back to Daniel chapter 7, verse 8, verse 11, verse 25, chapter 11, verse 36. It says, he'll speak very pompous words, it says. So he's going to be a big talker, a very arrogant talker. It says, his arrogance will surpass that of anyone else in human history. He will be Satan's mouthpiece, voicing his master's frustrated rage against God. In the previous chapter, chapter 12, the end of the chapter said, and the dragon was enraged with the woman. And that's because it says he knows that he only has a short time. So he's enraged and he's arrogant, blaspheming. And then we see the end of verse 5, God will grant Antichrist authority to act for only 42 months. That is the last 3.5 years of the tribulation, the latter half of the 70th week of Daniel's prophecy. Antichrist and Satan will be allowed to operate only within the time limit set for them by the true ruler of the universe. Jesus referred to this in Matthew chapter 24, verse 22. He says, those days will be shortened. So a sovereign God is in control over this. And that's why we don't need to be afraid. Again, it's like God's telling Satan, look, you got 42 months to get ready for this final showdown. You give it your best shot. And that's what we see. He's pulling all his power together for this final showdown. We see his activity, verse 7. Because some refuse to worship him, Antichrist will make war with the saints and overcome them. Believers will bear the brunt of his murderous fury. The result will be a worldwide slaughter of God's people. Now, these are people that are saved during that tribulation period. We're going to see that there's evidence here with this chapter that the church, believers that are saved now, will be raptured out before this. So the ones that are martyred during this period are those that enter into the tribulation period unsaved, but get saved during that tribulation period. We're going to see, we saw last week, God's protection of Jewish believers during that time. We saw Israel as the woman who fled into the wilderness and was protected there. The latter part of chapter 12, verses 13 to 17, Satan's effort to spew out this flood to destroy them, and whatever that flood is, whether it's an army or literal flood, that God thwarts that. But it's going to be a time in his activity when Satan has on his radar to destroy anyone who claims the name of Christ. Daniel 7, verse 25, Daniel prophesied this. It says, he shall speak pompous words against the Most High, and shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. So this persecution will begin at the midpoint of the tribulation, when the Antichrist breaks his covenant with Israel and he sets up the abomination of desolation, which many believe is this image here in chapter 13 of himself. He sets that up in the temple and he demands that the world worship him as God. Then we see his admirers, verse 8. says the phrase "all who dwell on the earth" is used throughout Revelation to describe unbelievers and does not include everyone who will be alive at that time. Here, the limiting factor is specifically stated. It is everyone whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Unbelievers, those whose names are not recorded in the book of life, will perish. Why? If you've got your finger in 2 Thessalonians, look back at chapter 10. We'll start at verse 9. It says, "The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan." We're going to see the work of the false prophet fits this. "With all power and signs and lying wonders, with all unrighteous deception among those who perish." Why do they perish? "Because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved." So this is the first beast, the Antichrist. Verses 9 and 10, we have a transition. This astounding vision of the beast from the sea concludes with a call for spiritual understanding, a warning. "If anyone has an ear, let him hear." This warning is echoed 15 times in the New Testament. In the book of Revelation, we've already seen it 7 times in chapter 2 and chapter 3. And in all its previous uses in the book of Revelation, it's followed by the phrase, "what the Spirit says to the churches." However, notice here the omission of that phrase. And the omission suggests that the church is not in view in this passage. They've already been raptured before the tribulation. So we see that phrase occurring here, but the omission of what the Spirit says to the churches, because scholars believe the church has already been raptured, it's not here. And here the phrase introduces a proverb: "He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity, and he who kills with a sword must be killed with a sword." This proverb contains important practical truth for those believers alive at the time of Antichrist's persecution. They are to depend on God's providence and not take matters into their own hands. It says, "Here is the patience and the faith of the saints." Now, what's the meaning of this proverb? It says, "He who leads into captivity." The idea of their leading into captivity, we'd say the one who's taking prisoners. We see the Antichrist here is basically taking prisoner of the whole world as they follow him and worship him. So saying, "He who leads into captivity," it's a reference to the Antichrist, "shall go into captivity." We're going to come to chapter 20. He himself is going to be bound and taken prisoner and bound for 1,000 years before he's released for a short time and ultimately defeated and cast into the lake of fire. So saying, the one who's taking prisoners is going to be taken prisoner. He who kills, we're seeing that the Antichrist and the false prophets will have authority to kill those who don't worship the beast, those who don't receive the mark of the beast. So the ones killing must be killed with the sword. He says, "Here is the faith and the patience of the saints." He's saying, don't forget what the outcome of this is. This guy who's taking captive the whole world, he's going to be captured and he's going to be dealt with. This guy who's killing all the Christians, he's going to be killed. Now, here's the faith. Do you believe that? And if you believe that, that's what's going to give you the patience, the endurance during this time period. Here's the faith and the patience of the saints. So that's the transition here. He inserts this right in between this alarming description of what's happening during this time period with the Antichrist and the false prophet. And we move to the false prophet. Some view this second beast as an institution or a form of government. However, the use of the Greek word "other" here, it says, "Then I saw another beast." The word used here means another of the same kind. It indicates that he'll be a person just like the Antichrist. What will he be like? First of all, he'll be deceptive. The description of the first beast with its 10 horns, 7 heads, 10 crowns, and 7 blasphemous names was grotesque and frightening. In contrast, the second beast merely had 2 horns. That indicates that he is not characterized by the same massive might as Antichrist. Unlike the savage, ferocious, fierce, and deadly Antichrist, who is likened to a leopard, a bear, and a lion, the false prophet seems as harmless as a lamb. He does not come as a conquering dictator, but appears as a subtle deceiver with meekness and gentleness, though not without great authority. It says the false prophet will speak like a dragon. Like the Antichrist will be the dragon's, Satan's mouthpiece, so will be the false prophet. He will speak winsome, deceiving words of praise about the Antichrist, luring the world to worship the satanic dictator. He's going to be deceptive. He'll be powerful. Verse 12 says, he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. That he exercises his authority in Antichrist's presence implies that Antichrist will have delegated that authority to him. His mission will be to cause the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, the Antichrist. He will be the leader, this false prophet, of the worldwide religion of Antichrist worship. Verse 12 describes this. The Antichrist says, whose deadly wound was healed. The false prophet's efforts will receive a tremendous boost from a startling, spectacular event, the apparent healing of the first beast's fatal wound. And again, whether that's actual or whether it's merely staged as a deceptive part of the false prophet's ability to do signs and wonders and miracles. Regardless, the result is that the world is amazed, and it says they follow the beast. Verse 13 tells us he has the ability to perform great signs. And again, this is because we see that verse 5 says they're given authority to continue for 42 months. So the Lord is given free reign of their authority and power during this time period. Another important point with that, if you're back at 2 Thessalonians, because one of the issues in 2 Thessalonians, the Thessalonian believers were alarmed because some people were saying the day of the Lord is already here. Now notice what he says. Look at chapter 2 of 2 Thessalonians. Let's start at verse 1. It says, now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first, and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. I don't know, but it appears we're already seeing some falling away. But he says that day is not going to come unless there's a falling away first, and the man of sin is revealed. This man of sin here is the Antichrist, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshiped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? And now you know what is restraining, that he may be revealed in his own time. So there's something that is restraining him from being revealed at the moment. He says, for the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. That direction is, we're already headed that, it's already at work. It says, only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way. So there's a restraint that's going to be removed so that this freedom of authority of Satan during this 42 months can take place. Most scholars think that the restraint here is that believers will be raptured, who each believer has the Holy Spirit in him. There'll be no more Holy Spirit restraint here on the earth. And then the lawless one will be revealed. And we see he jumps immediately to the conclusion, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. So we see that the false prophet here is going to have, but the Antichrist and the false prophet will not be revealed, 2 Thessalonians says, until that restraint is removed. Verse 13 says, he performs great signs. Those signs mimic not only the miracles performed by Jesus Christ, but also those of the two witnesses. You turn back to chapter 11, verse 5 and 6, and it speaks of the witnesses who could call down fire from heaven. And we see that false prophet here is given that authority. Those who reject the saving gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ will eagerly accept the damning false gospel preached by the false prophet, since it appears to be verified by spectacular supernatural signs. We saw in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 9, it says, the coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders. You know, the world is set up with that already, with the fascination, with the signs and wonders movement. And maybe you've seen advertising that come to this, you know, evangelistic meeting where, you know, people are healed of all kinds of diseases and all kinds of miraculous things are happening, miracles. The world's already set the stage for the ministry of the false prophet, who's going to be able to do all these miraculous things that seemingly verify the message as he tells everyone to worship the beast. What's his plan? First of all, we see it involves idolatry. It says, verse 14, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast. And we look at religion and see how it's slipping further and further away from the truth. It's going to go right back to outright idolatry, forming an image and commanding people to bow down to it. Verse 15 says, he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast. The false prophet will animate the image of Antichrist so that it gives the appearance of being alive. One commentator said that, with today's amazing special effects technology, that is not out of the realm of possibility. Add to that the world's desperate need, amid the carnage of the tribulation, to believe in a death conqueror, and the deception becomes very believable. So idolatry. Another part of his plan is execution. Verse 15, it says, and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. John chapter 16, verse 2, Jesus told his disciples, he said, the time is coming that whoever kills you will think that he offers God service. So part of his plan here is the execution, the killing of anyone who will not worship the beast. And then we see his plan of economic control. Antichrist's empire will maintain strict economic control over the world. Food and the other necessities of life in demand on the devastated earth. And if we've moved to Revelation, we've seen how devastated the earth has been through all the various visitations. Food and other necessities of life will be unobtainable for those without the mark. Says you here, it says in chapter 13, you can't buy or sell unless you have that mark. And that's going to be under conditions far worse than we live in now. Currency will probably vanish to be replaced by controlled credit. We're talking about this Wednesday night. The world revolves on credit now. Linda's, Ewan's, Deborah's sister, had cash to go buy a car, and the dealerships wouldn't talk to her, only sell on credit. The world will be, instead of currency, to be replaced by controlled credit. Instead of a credit card, people will have a mark of some unspecified type in their forehead or hand. The number being given here, 666. Lots of speculation has gone out as who this 66 represents. And they'll give number values to letters and try to figure out. The Antichrist hasn't been revealed yet, so whoever they've speculated, most likely it's not them. So what's the conclusion here? The three words of counsel for those tribulation saints, where I think it's good counsel for us. I don't believe we're going to be here. It's good counsel for us as we perhaps are moving toward that time. One is here in chapter verse 18. It says, here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding. Do we have wisdom and understanding? That's why the book of Revelation was given to us. Now, 2 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 4 says, but you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. We're finally going through the book of Revelation. Part of the benefit we can get from this is like we're getting to read the last chapter. We're getting to see what the outcome is. So we don't have to be alarmed. The one that's taking prisoners here is going to be taken prisoner. The one that's killing here, he's going to be killed. So don't get worried. Don't get alarmed. Wisdom and understanding. There's also some wisdom in verse 10. It says, here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Faith. Do you believe what he said in this proverb? The one, these two world powerful leaders empowered by Satan here, they're going to be killed. They're going to be taken captive. Well, there's the saints' faith. And faith in that truth will help you endure. That will help you endure. So the two beasts of the Revelation, the Antichrist and the false prophet. Sounds like a very dark hour. But remember, 42 months is approaching an end. The light of dawn and the defeat at Armageddon is just on the horizon. They don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be afraid. Let's bow in prayer as we close.